Oh, Mike, I'm at it. This is happening. And it's funny, I see Charlotte today, and she said, I'm really nervous, you know what I mean, doing this year. And I thought, God, if you're nervous, I must be more nervous. Try to do 40 minutes. And, yeah, but it's nice to be here, it really is. And I'm trying to like block the microphone so I don't get recorded. One of my tricks. And yeah, it's nice to be here. And it's nice to be amongst friends, people I've met in treatment, people I've met in my journey of recovery. And I don't know what's going on with that line, but yeah. I feel nervous because I hate doing shares, but I know it's not about me, it's about me carrying the message, not the mess, you know what I mean? And I used to go to the 7:30 morning meeting this morning in Chelsea, and I didn't wake up, and I thought I'd have a little lie-in, you know, because I knew I was doing the share, and I ended up in my bed, you know, I'm not having a lie-in, doing about 10 shares in my head. Hate it. I've deleted all of them. I do this and do that. Then I thought, hold on, I'll write something down, you know? And, you know, I can't do that, you know what I mean? What comes from me, you know? It comes from my mind, my body. And some of the things that I'm going to share, but I haven't done a thing, no, I believe in speaking my truth. That's what I've always been told there, you know, the truth will set me free. And also, I just got a few announcements. I thanked the committee for asking to come to the chair. Me and Michael P, I think I am the first sharer that's done a meeting there 12 years ago when me and Gary started it. When Gary and Michael P, we done the first meeting. I done the first 40-minute share, that was 12 years ago. So I'm really grateful and proud that I'm still clean, you know what I mean? And to come back here and to carry the message. And, you know, it's been a hard... I want to share where I've been in the last couple weeks or a couple months. It's been a tough couple of months. I've been really struggling. You know, and I know I like to laugh, you know, and have a giggle. And it's the mask, you know what I mean? But underneath that mask, there's been a lot of pain happening in the last couple of months. And just share credit, you know, my mum, I live with my mum, she's got dementia. And it's been really tough, you know, living with her, looking after her. And I think what it is, right, I've been in recovery a long time and I'm used to like getting up in the morning, going to work, going to meetings, and then I've got this routine, you know what I mean? And I get used to it. And all of a sudden, the last couple of months, this routine's been taken away from me. I've had to like look after my mum, feed her every day, you know what I mean? And it's been really tough, and I've been falling out with my sisters, wanting to fight them, you know what I mean? Taking their infantries, and as you do, and praying for them as well. And I hate it when my sponsor says, like, if you get angry with people, pray for them. I want to do them over. Yeah. And it's so hard work praying for them because it doesn't go straight away. You know, you're on your knees every day, I wish for good things, and I'm like, mightily, like, and I get off on my knees and I want to do them over. Then I got to get back, do infantry. You know, I've got to share it. Then I've got to go back on my knees again. And it's hard work, you know what I mean? But it's been tough. It's been really tough the last couple of months. And you know why I'm sharing this as well? Because I feel like I've never felt like I was getting depressed in recovery, and I feel like I have been a little bit. And what I saw, right, is that, you know, I'm one of these guys that I pray every day. You don't have to do what I do, but I pray every day. I do inventory, I go to meetings, I do H&I, I do service, I sponsor people. And that has always kept me in good stem, you know. A couple of months ago, I saw my behavior, I saw my anger. I was doing step 10, but it wasn't shifting. And I remember going into like prayer and all that, and I was in prayer. And I was looking at blokes like I wanted to fight them. And I thought, Mike, you're not right. You know, something's not right. Couldn't get hold of my sponsor. And I've done therapy when I first come around, but for years and years, I've never done therapy. And I sponsored quite a few people, and I got called up to Harley Street, and I met one of the counselors wanted to meet me, and he said, Mike, you know, you've helped a lot of people, well done, and all that. And I spoke to someone, then I realised in a lot of pain one day, and I thought, I need a favour, and I found up this particular counsellor. So I said, can you help me out? And he sent me to someone, to see someone on Harley Street. And I went up there about 2 or 3 months ago, and I remember knocking on his door, and I went in there, and I sat there, and he said, what can I do for you? And I just fucking, it's mad. I've never done this before. I broke down crying. I cried and I cried for 45 minutes. And a poor therapist, he just looked at me and he said, you're safe, you know what I mean? He was like, hey, fuck. You know, people work hard for their money. I just felt like, I just went, I must have been the most easiest client he's come. Oh, man. And, but you know what? It's like, it's where I wanted to be. I just needed to go in the door and just cry. Because, you know, I've got this pride, my ego, the big man. I mustn't cry. You know what I mean? I find it hard to cry in meetings in front of my sponsor, but for some particular reason, it must be my higher power. It's like, Mike, you ain't right. It's whether you use or you chin someone and put someone in hospital or you kill your sisters. You know what I mean? And I didn't want to do none of them. So I realised it was about my feelings. You know what I mean? I had to get them out. You know, women cry easy, but men, we, you know, for me, it goes up and down and it goes around, it turns into resentments and all that. But the rage that I was feeling, I knew I wasn't right. And I had to go and see this guy, you know what I mean? And yeah, I'm a bit resentful because I keep going to see him every week and paying money. I'm really tired, that's another share, you know what I mean? That's one of my character defects, I'm very greedy. Yeah, so yeah, he's helped me a lot, this guy, and also as well, while that was going on as well, you know, I got a job and I'm doing all right, and I thought, when I get older, when I retire or something, like when I get older, I like to do like therapy and be a counselor and all that, and I've also signed up to do that as well, and I've ended up going to university. I've only been there like a couple of months, but you know, I've got dyslexia, yeah, and when I went to the course, I actually told them, I'm really glad, I said, look, I want to do this diploma, but I've got dyslexia, what can we do, you know what I mean, because I told the whole group, there's like 16 girls in my class, and lucky man, and I didn't want to look silly, if you see what I mean, so I kind of got honest about my recovery and told them, you know, I suffer from dyslexia and I'm going to find the course really hard, and they were also doing the essay, and the teacher said to me, look, you've got to get a dyslexia test, and I did, and went and got one, that cost me 300 quid, another resentment, I had to get that done as well, and you know, it came back quite bad. I felt really embarrassed sitting there, going through all this reading and writing tests and stuff like that, and I come out there, I feel a bit degraded, but I had to do it, you know what I mean? Because of that pride and that ego. And so anyway, Christmas time, the teacher called me out of the class. She didn't call me, she said to Mike, look, she read my report. She said, look, you haven't got to do it if you don't want to do it, the essay. She said, why don't you just try it, you know what I mean? And I thought, well, I'm going to struggle, you know what I mean? So I was doing this essay, and I had to do 2,000 words. 200 words, and I was finding it really hard to write down this essay. And you know what? I do inventory every day, 4 sheets, yeah? 1 sheet, A4 every day. I said to myself, if I can do, I don't know, if I had 10 sheets, that come to like 2,000 words. So every night I was writing and writing, you know, one A4 sheet. And I wrote about all the subjects that I had to write about, and someone in the fellowship helped me, and he typed it all up, and we got to like 2,400, and he said, Mike, you're nearly finished. And I kind of like completed it, all I did. And I gave it in, and this week as well, I had 3 things to do. I put my essay in, I'd done my grading for Hakido, got up another bell, I do Hakido as well, I took my grading for that. And I had to come around and I thought, fuck, all 3 things are gonna like go wrong. And I'm gonna be honest with my, this is my, I feel a bit ashamed, but I'm gonna be honest. The essay came back not too good, you know? And I gave it to my therapist and he read it. And I said, read it, you know? Because once I read it, I didn't pass. I kind of like, you know, that gut in my feeling, I was ashamed of like, oh no, I've got to go into class tomorrow, which is Saturday, and there's 16 girls, they're all gonna be happy, clappy. And I'm gonna be there, my head down, like, look at those sorts. You know what I mean? And like, take the inventory, which I don't mind doing, but then I had this little voice, this little kiddie voice in my head say, I'm not going, I can't go, I can't face them. you know what I mean? I've got to tell them that I didn't do too good. And but the mad thing about it, I found out, I gave the essay, the feedback to my therapist, and he read it, and he said to me, Mike, you know what? He said, you almost passed. You're just under below it. You know, the point that they want you to do it, you just got to correct it. And I thought, that's mad. I hadn't done it in like 2 weeks, you know what I mean? But I can only say, I didn't think I'd pass. But they want to see what I can do so they can work with me. You get me? I find out my tutor said, Mike, don't even worry about this. Just come in and we'll do it verbally. We'll do it another way. Do you know what I mean? But I feel really ashamed about being dyslexic sometimes. And, you know, as a kid, you know, I didn't go to school. You know, I always run away from school. You know, I found it hard to read and write. I come from a dysfunctional family, do you know what I mean? And while all this stuff was going on for me, you know, I wanted to run away. I didn't want to go to college. I didn't want to go to work. And I heard this, Charlie talking about Thailand. I had my addict go, Mike, yeah, let's run away to Thailand, you know. And I wasn't going to go to Thailand to no rehab either. And I have been to Thailand, and I will share about it, but yeah, it wasn't good. And yeah, so this is what I heard. I heard my addict head say, this is the job on the plane, go to Thailand, don't tell the sponsor. And I knew it was my illness. You know, I wanted to act out, wanted to run away, and also get a massage. You know, I got bad back. Look at that one out, so you know what's coming later. Anyway. I don't feel I've got enough time for that one anyway. But anyway, so yeah. Recovery's been, you know, I kind of sit here today and I think, I felt ashamed about my schoolwork and all that, but you know, to be honest with you, really, the most precious thing to me is being clean. You know, it really is. You know, I've always heard that anything I put from recovery, I lose it. You know, that could be girlfriend, job, my mum, my kids, anything. I've seen what this illness does. You know, my disease lives in my head. You know, it really does. And, you know, I just want to share quickly about, you know, my childhood. You know, I come from a dysfunctional family. You know, my first addiction was stealing. I used to nick bikes. And I always remember when I was about 10, I used to nick, I think I nicked a chopper bike. I think I did nick a chopper bike. Get what I mean? And I remember painting it, you know, I used to nick bikes, you know what I mean? I used to think they're mine, and I used to steal. I feel really bad saying that, but, you know, all my friends and that. And I remember the police took me in the police station once when I was about 11 and showed me the cell. And they said, this is what's going to happen to you if you don't stop stealing, you know? My mum, she was very violent. She had big arms like Popeye. My dad, he left my mum with 5 kids. And I used to wet the bed every day. And I remember my mum, she used to strangle me and chuck me in the air. And I'd dangle, my legs would dangle, and I'd run off, you know. And I always remember, you know, this sounds really bad. I used to nick clothes with the line. I used to go to school wearing boots on. I used to eat coal. I used to eat dirt. You know, I was always on my toes. I was always running away. And I was sent to a convent with nuns and all that, with my sisters, because my mum couldn't look after us. And I went back to my mum's, and I kept on running away again. And I was always out with older kids getting into trouble, do you know what I mean? And at the age of 12, I committed 30 burglaries with older kids. I always remember that. And I was sent to a juvenile court in Brixton. I always remember that as well. And I remember my friends, they got sent to Stanford House, and I got sent to the Hollies. And at the age of 12, I still remember, right, sitting in a prison van, big one, the green ones, I don't even remember the old days, with a screw and a social worker, going to a children's home, the Hollies it was called. I remember going there, and they looked at my report, and they said, wow, 30 burglaries. And I thought, I didn't really do 30 burglaries. I just wanted to get away from my mum. You know, I just wanted to get 3 meals a day. That's how my life was, you know, I was an escapist. And the judge gave me a probation officer, and I stayed in that children's home for about, I don't know, 6 months, went back to my mum. I kept on running away again, sleeping at old people's houses. You know, I felt shame going to school with wellington boots on and no money, you know what I mean? And I didn't have no toys. Everything I'd done, I stole it. And The base master said to me, Mike, this has got to stop. You can't stay in Mum no more. We're going to put you in care. And I was sent to a special needs boarding school, you know, in Newbury. And I remember this school, you know, I mean, there was about five of us in the class. It was a beautiful school, grounds and all that. And didn't stop me from stealing, I did it, bikes. And I was always getting into trouble in this school in Newbury. And I remember my teacher sat me down in the class room, just me and him. And he said to me, Mike, look, this is the deal. If you don't listen, you're going to end up like the other black kids that I've met. You're going to end up 10-year sentence, ball stores in prison. And I looked at him and I thought, that sounds really exciting. And at that time, you know, I was about 14, 15, and, you know, I grew up in Brixton on the front line, you know, and I was a pickpocketer. I was burglaring when I was a kid. I ended up being a pickpocketer. I used to work the undergrounds in the bus stop, you know, Oliver Swift. They got pick a pocketer too. My hands was in everything. And, that was my trade, I suppose, and that's how I survived. You know, I went out with the gangs, we worked the undergrounds in the bus stop, and I always remember I got arrested, and I remember going to the Inner London Crown Court, and I was about 16, 15, and the judge, and I remember looking in the court round, I was looking for my mum, I couldn't see no one, and I looked back, and my mum was there, the only person, I was sent down. And I sent me to this detention centre, it was like a boot camp. I remember coming out of the van and a big bag, a kit, run up and down the corridor. I had afro hair at the time. I shaved it off and, you know, I had to go in my cell. I had to scrub the floor every day, we had to march. You know, it was like, fuck it. I thought, Jesus Christ, I ain't coming back here again, you know what I mean? 3 months of this, you know. It petrified me and I came out of there and I thought, I ain't gonna do that again. I had a girlfriend at the time, and she was pregnant, and I ended up being at Marble Arch bus stop. I always remember I had my hands in some lady's bag, and the police grabbed my hand and we nicked you again for sus. And I remember going in the scrubs. I went to Knightsbridge Crown Court, and I remember seeing the judge. His name was Judge Friend. He said, "My name's Judge Friend, but I'm no friend of yours." And he sent me to ball stall, and. And I remember being in ball store, you know what I mean, and wearing the scrubs, and it was tough, man. And this white kid said to me, Mike, he said, do you ever get a dead John? You know about it. I said, what's a dead John? You know what I mean? I couldn't read good as well. And I remember the school one day, just have a letter leave my cell door. And that was my dead. My girlfriend said, I don't want to go out, you know more, you're seeing someone else. Oh, fuck. And that was the first time I ever felt emotional pain, you know what I mean? I read this letter. I was devastated. I couldn't sleep at night. I got another letter from my mate. Your girlfriend is sleeping with all your best mates, wearing your clothes, getting drunk. Fuck. Right, this is the story, right? So when I'm in boarding school, my other addiction was fantasy, right? So I locked myself away in the classroom. I listened to the Jackson 5. Oh man, I was an escapist fantasy. And I knew why, because I didn't want to be here. I wanted to be with my sisters, they weren't here. So I could escape in fantasy when I was a kid. That's how I survived. So I'm in this cell, and I got this letter that my girlfriend's looking for my best mates. I couldn't cry, I couldn't sleep. What did my fantasies do? They changed from the Jackson 5, thinking about my girlfriend sleeping with my mates. Jesus Christ. And I acted out around that stuff, you know, in my head, you know what I'm talking about. And I was like trying to get away from those feelings, and it was terrible. And I'd done a year in Ballston, and I come out and I thought, I won't have one girlfriend, I'll have three. You know, if one leaves me, I've got two. And I remember when I was in the scrubs as well, this kid said to me, Mike, if you ever go to the Old Bailey, right, the van goes down on the turntable and it turns. And I thought, that sounds really exciting. Right? So I ended up I had 3 crown court cases, I had 3 years, 2 years in the year. I ended up going to the Old Bailey and I ended up getting 3 years and 2 years. I ended up going back to Wilmer Scrubs. All the schools knew me now. My job, I used to work in a bar fast looking after all the lifers. All the schools knew me in the Scrubs. So it was like a second home prison. I ended up going to Blunderstone, Wilmer Scrubs. I ended up doing the high down prison. I spent half my life, from the age of like 16 to the age of like 22, I spent in and out of prison. To couldn't read or write. I had a drug problem, I used to drink. I came out of prison when I was about 22, 23, and I saw that film, you know, the film Scarface. And I thought, yeah, this is the guy I want to be like, you know. So what did I do? Start selling cocaine. You know, they said, don't get high on your own supply. I did, you know. But I had a good life, you know. Which I started off with fun. You know, I mean, I used to go string fellas, drinking champagne, snorting cocaine. I had a nice flat in Baker Street. I had a lot of money. I don't want to brag. I had a lot of money, a nice car. I had nice things, you know what I mean? But to be honest with you, cocaine became my lover, you know, and money became my partner, become my God as well. And I had three girlfriends. I used to watch myself how I used to act out and use drugs, right? I done it for fun. I had three girlfriends. I'd be acting out with them, you know what I'm talking about, watching films that you shouldn't be watching. And I was in it, you know what I mean? It was my love. I couldn't make love about cocaine. You know, I'd be drinking, snorting, and that was the life that I had. Then I started to get really paranoid, looking out the window, thinking the police are coming, you know what I mean, as we do. And a friend of mine, well, it was a really good friend of mine at the time, but at the time I thought he wasn't, but he said to me, "Mike, why do you stick up your nose? Why do you stick it on the pipe?" In them days it was freebasing, and sounds posh, wasn't it, freebasing. And that's what I done. I got hooked on the pipe, you know. And my habit was horrendous. I used to smoke 10 hours a day, you know. I had a lot of money in the bank. I was going there, drawing up money, looking for the window, the police are coming, you know. I stick my fingers in my ear. I got really paranoid, you know what I mean? This is what my addiction taught me, you know. Cut a long story short, cut time's flying. Cut a long story short, you know, I ended up losing everything and I ended up getting a job. I don't know how I'd done this, you know. I ended up getting a job working for the record companies, right? I used to drive limos, not the stretch limos. When they first come out, I was one of the first guys to drive them. I had this knack of, like, you know, looking after people as well. And this bloke said to me, "Mike, I want you to look after my daughters." He's a famous singer. He took me to the Dorchester Hotel and he said, "This is the deal. Will you look after my daughter? You get a contract looking after her." And I knew she was. Done a break camera near me. And I ended up looking after this girl in for the record companies. And it was Island Records. And they said to me, "Mike, we really like the way you operate. Can you look after a couple more artists?" And I ended up getting my own business. I used to look after all the top pop stars. I ended up looking after the top boxers. I used to train with Lennox Lewis, Nigel Benn. I used to look after all the top fighters. And that was my job. You know, I can't believe I couldn't read or write. I had no education. And I had a nice flat in Hampstead. I was drinking. I was snorting. I had three girlfriends. Full-time job. And my dishonesty got worse and worse. And my girlfriend, she caught me sleeping out a few times, and that was when it really got worse. She left me with my kids, and I went to pieces. And I ended up getting her hooked on the pipe with me, and that was really one of the worst things I've ever done. So anyway, I ended up losing my business, I lost my cars, I lost my contracts, and I ended up on the crack pipe with her, you know, doing £300 a day. My mum was looking after the kids. You know, the highs, you know, house in Hampstead, a lot of money. My lows, I lost everything, lost the heart, cars, lost my business. My partner walked out me one day, said, "I'm going to pick up the kids," and she didn't come back to me. And it was the best thing she's ever done, really. I ended up selling everything in her flat, TV, video, washing machine. I remember the last thing I sold was my bed for one rock. And I had a little black cat, and if I could have put on a pipe, I would have. I still remember going on the floor looking for dog ends, getting the dustbins looking for dog ends, you know, with my fingernails black. I end up in a park bench drinking tennis, champagne, wine, coming all the way down, you know what I mean? And, you know, I'd do anything for smoke crack. I was like a vampire, I'd come out at night, knock on people's door, my car's been clamped, I've lost some money, you know what I mean? It got bad. I end up in a treatment centre, you know, City Roads. Thank God for City Roads. I was in there, I saw this guy who I used to use with, Dave. He's still clean now, and he was the worst junkie I've seen. He lived in my mum's house around Kennington, and he was a counsellor. You know, you see people with white eyes. I said, "Dave," I said, "you look well." He said, "Mike, you look like shit, you gotta stay out." And he looked after me, you know what I mean? In City Roads, I used to pray. And all the women used to walk out and sell themselves for crack. And my head at night used to say, I always say that my disease lives in my head. right? He said to me, this is my, he was going, Mike, get me out. Get me some crack. Get me out. And I used to think, who's this talking to me? And when I was in prison, right, I'd pray. If I go and see the judge, this is my favourite prayer. Please, God, get me off this one. I won't do it again. And I'd get off and I'd do it again. Now I'm in City Rolls upstairs in the dormitory. Please, God, keep me out. My head's talking to me. And I'd pray every day in City Rolls. And I got through 2 weeks. Then I got through three. They went, Mike, you're going to the treatment centre. And they sent me to Barley Water Treatment Centre. And Todd, yeah, he was in treatment with me. And I was in City Roads, and that's when my journey started. I was in there, Layla was in there. Everyone was, you know, Radcliffe was in there, all the boys, you know what I mean? Radcliffe, anyway, by the way, he sent his love. He's in treatment again. God bless him. Yeah, and I remember he put it on me, he went, Mike, get honest. I walked into Barley Water, looked at all the pictures on the wall. I went, I nicked that. The cutlery, I love that. The women, I love her. You get me? And the women, they confronted me in the group. They went, I want to confront someone. They went, ooh, the case said, ooh, I want to confront Mike. And if I was white, I would have gone red. They said, they tried to chat me up. I went, it's him, I don't like him, I don't like her. And I ended up staying in. People said to me, Mike, get honest, and I got honest. Stayed in Barley Wood. My mate, he went out for a weekend, he died. And I realised, you know, I was up against life and death. I wasn't in a prison no more. I was in the crazy house, I was in treatment. So I done the steps, the baby steps in treatment. I did come out, they sent me to an adult child treatment centre in Western Supermare. And the counsellors took me right back to the age of 12. And guess what happened to the age of 12? They realised that I was sexually abused by a psychiatrist. And I just cried, and the counsellor said to me, Mike, how could you give love? You never had it, you didn't get it from your mum. You know what I mean? And I just cried. He said, you've got to go to college, you've got to learn how to read and write. You've got to look after yourself. I spent a year in treatment in Western Supermare. I went to college when I lived in the woods. You know, and in recovery, they said to me, we're going to learn to love you until you learn to love yourself. You know, that was one of the most powerful things I've ever come across. So I stayed in Western for 5 years, got a girlfriend, I ended up working in a club, messing about, came back to London, and they said to me, do H&I. And they said to me, go into the prisons, Mike. And that's what I'd done. I went into Brixton, Hyden, Wandsworth, and I took the meetings in there for 8-9 years. I ended up getting a job working for the newspapers, looking after the editors of Daily Express, all the newspapers. I ended up going to the World Convention, and I ended up getting to relationships. You want to know yourself, get into a relationship. I went into a relationship with my partner, we went to America, and I got jealous. And I remember the old time, he took me at the convention, they went, Mike, you're not right, you know what I mean? I was getting with my girlfriend. My girlfriend went to me, Mike, why can't you find some friends? You keep on following me around the place all the time. And she was talking about with blokes, and I wanted to deck them, you know what I mean? And guys in the face in the convention took me out. The convention took me to San Francisco to Alcatraz to calm me down, you know. And I come back and I'm still looking for it. You know what I mean? The old time was like 30 years clean. They went, Mike, you got to do step one. You're powerless over people, places, and things. You know what I mean? And this girl went to me, Mike, I really hate your high power. I said, why? He's showing you all your defects in you. You know what I mean? And it was true. And I came back to London and I ended up working the steps, you know, and I got through my steps and all that, step four. I ended up ending the relationship, right, because she was like an NA guru, this girl. They all loved her, you know, I'm a good speaker. And I ended up leaving the meetings. I ended up hiding an AA meeting for a year. Can you believe it? I got paranoid. And I came back after, yeah, and I wanted everyone said to me, right, where you been? Jesus Christ, I thought, I've been hiding out for a year. Because my head just went mad, you know. I thought everyone knew, everyone was talking about me, and it wasn't, it was me. I was hiding from me. And anyway, so I had to do some work, you know what I mean? And the work we do, you know, it's in the steps. You know, it took me a long time to work the steps. And I remember it took me about 10 years, and my sponsor took me through the steps again. And I really started to understand, you know, step one to me, I know it's about powerlessness, unmanageability, and denial, but to me, step one, right, it says in the other book, if I put a drinking drug in me, it sets off that phenomenal craving that makes it virtually impossible for me to stop. When I heard that, that's enough, that scares me. I can't stop. And that goes in everything, that goes in watching things I shouldn't be doing, acting out. That phenomenal craving, that's what I've got in me, and it sets it off. and I can't stop. And I have to come to believe in a power greater than myself in the second step. And it ain't me, it's the steps, it's the literature, sponsor, you know what I mean? And you know, I had to understand, you know, what insanity is to repeat the same mistakes. And my insanity is in my head, it's in my thinking. You know, when I wake up in the morning, my head attacks people. You know, I get angry, I get resentful. I think the boss is out to get me, you lot don't like me, you know what I mean? And it's all in my head, you know, it's my disease. You know, it tells me lies, you know. And I love writing, you know what I mean? You know, a pen today saves my black ass. I write inventory every day, you know what I mean? And when I write down my resentments and how it affects me, and I'm selfish, self-seeking, fighting and all that stuff, I see who I am, you know what I mean? It's in my head. And when I write it down, it takes the power out of it. I've got to take inventory, you know? I've got to take supervision of my head. And I do that if we work in the steps, but I just remember when I've done my steps three, making that decision, to turn my will over, it's about action, it's about, I love this quote, action brings about change, thinking brings about more thinking. When I do the action, my life gets better. And I've done the steps, I've done my step six. Step six to me is about the seven deadly sins, resentment and anger and fear, greed, all that stuff. That stuff brings me to my knees to this day sometimes. I had to go into the other fellowship, the S program. I had to work the steps in there. You know, I can say it today, I've worked the steps in every program. You know, I'm still sick sometimes, you know what I mean? But I know who I am, if you see what I mean. And I don't act out like I used to. I don't act out around sex. I don't act out around money no more. I don't do dishonest things. I told the truth, I work the spiritual program, you know what I mean? And, you know, today, you know, I think next month I'll be celebrating 25 years. Still one day at a time, though. I used to think when I get the 5 years, I cracked it. I get the 10, I don't go to more meetings. I'm 28 years, I still do more meetings than last time. I'm like a newcomer sometimes, you know. I have to maintain this stuff, you know, I'm not bomb-proof. I've seen my friends die. You know, I've had some good friends in recovery, I've lost them. You know, Johnny Two Bag, my mate died. Chris, who was there, last time I done a check, I was with Chris, he's died. My mate died a couple of weeks ago, went to the gym, 6 years clean, never come out, 40 years of age. Then Chris died, my mate Johnny died, and I've lost so many friends. My kid's mum died of this illness, you know what I mean? I've lost so many friends in this program. You know, you say it's one day at a time, but to me, my heart beats every second. I'm happy to be alive, you know, because anything can kill me, you know. And it frightens me, this illness. It never goes away, you know. But I know one thing, that this program is more powerful than my disease. You know, when I work, I believe, right, this is what I've learned through my years in recovery. I do a daily program. I don't care what no one says. I wake up and I do my step three, step seven, right? I do inventory every day. It takes me 20 minutes. My sponsor said to me, how many hours did you smoke crack for? Like 8, 10 hours. What's 20 minutes? You know what I mean? I do inventory. I might take everyone else's inventory, but I do inventory. and I look at my part in it, you know what I mean? If I've been selfish, self-seeking and that. And that's the stuff that really sets me free. I do 5 meetings a week. I love doing meetings. Meetings are my medicine. I always say I come to meetings to get my medicine. I don't go into the dealer's house and down the pub. I come here to get my medicine. You know, and one thing I crave love. I need love. I need, you know, a hug. You know, these are the things that I love. This is an inside job. It ain't about money, cars. I've seen people, like one of my mates that I was in treatment with, he had 8 houses. I don't want to break down anyway. He had the best recovery. I used to get jealous of him. You know, last year he relapsed after 24 years. And it just showed me, this is me thinking, why can't I have what he's got? All the houses, nice girlfriend, you know, don't have to go work no more, he can go to India, do what he wants. And I just got shown that this program is about action. I have to keep coming here. When I take my foot off the pedal, the addict man is waiting for me. Mike, I know what I fix you. You know, within 10 days, right, a week, my head says to me, Mike, I don't like him, don't like her. My boss is a so-and-so, the girlfriend can get checked, she can go. My mum's no good. My disease, it just attacks. You know, this is the only thing that calms down the beast. is this spiritual program. You know, I need God. You know, I need my sponsor. I need you guys. You know, and I'm not saying this, you know, I don't care how long I'm clean, right? It is about action. I still do service. I do City Road still. Someone in there, they said, Mike, I saw you in the meeting, taking a meeting there in City Road last year. He thanked me, you know. This is what I do. We can only keep what we've got by giving it away. You know, and that's how this program works, you know what I mean? And it is about action, you know. I've got a daughter in recovery as well. She's relapsed a few times. I've seen them all to the hospital. Her mum died. She's got it bad. She's been in prison, in and out all the time. The other day she phoned me up and said, Dad, you know, come out of prison, she's gonna take. She said, I can't do it. I have to keep going to prison all the time. And I really wish that I could give her a quarter of my recovery sometimes. She said, I'm gonna end up dying like mum, you know that. And it really frightens me when I get phone calls from her. And the other day, she phoned me up, I think 2 weeks ago, and she said, Dad, I tried to commit suicide. I tried to chuck myself in front of the train. And that really blew me away. You know what I mean? I got depressed again. And but luckily, she's gone back into a halfway home now. She said, Dad, you'd be really proud of me. I said, what? I'm starting to go to meetings now. I said, what? She said, I go to meetings every day. I've got a job in St. Albans. She's doing the tills. Oh, God. Can you believe it? She's doing the tills. And if she has a bad day, I feel sorry for those tills. Yeah, but, you know, this shows me that, you know, people can change, you know what I mean? I've written her off. But I hope she gets it, you know what I mean? I really do. And I'm off to the Caribbean in 2 weeks' time. I've got a house in Essex. I've rented out 20 years. I've got a knockback and borrowed some money to build my house. I've got the LK. I'm building my house in Grenada, and I'm going to do the foundation in 2 weeks. I've waited 25 years, you know what I mean? They're my dreams. These are the things that happen when we can't really live our dreams, you know what I mean? You know, it does get better if I don't pick up, you know what I mean? And I feel like my sisters, I made amends to all of them. We all love each other now. My depression's gone, you know, I'm happy, I'm in a relationship, just for today. I made a few of those, that's double share, I ain't got time.
How long forgot?
No, 1 minute.
1 minute, all right. And yeah, I've had a few relationships and, you know, one thing, I have found in recovery as well how powerful my disease is, how it goes from drink, drugs, sex addiction. I don't watch things, you know what I'm talking about, because that sets that phenomenon. I don't do things to change the way I feel. You know, the only thing I do is spiritual things. I also sustain ones from relationships for a year, the hardest thing I've ever done. No sex, this spiritual things. I had to. I was using sex like a drug. I was getting off on it, getting the fantasy, getting a hit. I was using women, you know what I mean? I had to address that. That was painful, you know what I mean? I have to have a relationship with myself and God, and when I do that, my life gets better. And when I give up chasing things, things started to come to me, you know? And, you know, the right person's come to me, I'm taking them to Grenada with me for 4 weeks, hope we get on, and, because, you know, my head can turn on anything, you know what I mean? I can look at it and think, she don't look right. Do a new one. You know that one, don't you? This is what my head can do. So I have to do inventory every day, you know what I mean? And because my head is very tricky, you get me? Really tricky. And also the builders, I'm thinking they're gonna rip me off, you know, so I've got to be there, you know what I mean? I think if I come to them. Yay. Yeah, well, anyway, I hope someone got something out of this, because I don't know if I do, but for the newcomers, please stick around for the miracle to happen. I love all of you. Take care. Bye. Yeah.